Thank you for joining us for today's podcast, which is with JP, who isn't a JP, but he is the JP that we all know. Anyway, look, we're going to look at things like his why. We're going to understand thinking. We're going to explore time travel, I think, in an interesting way. We're going to get out of our comfort zone, lists that maybe we should be on, discuss going Dutch, and really explore the concept of doing nothing. Okay, look, today we are incredibly honoured to have Jonathan Peach, a guy that has unquestionably helped me in lots of ways in my career in the world of sort of, he's someone that's become a friend. And because I know him, I'm going to pass it over to Jasmine to run through our questions with him.
Thank you, Jason. As Jason mentioned, we're both incredibly delighted to have JP here, a truly inspiring individual and thinker. And we've both had the pleasure of hearing some of his amazing insights, and we're so excited to hear them today. So, JP, would you mind by starting just telling everyone who you are?
Oh, wow, I'm blushing actually right now. Yeah, who am I? Jonathan Peach. Everybody calls me JP, hence the initials. Somebody once said at a conference, they said, oh, are you an actual JP? Just to see the piece, I went, no, they're just my initials. So yeah, JP, how I call what I call myself, performance coach, not always done it. Probably done it for the last, I've been involved in it for the last 6 or 7 years. Before that, I was a corporate suit, I suppose I would lovingly call myself, 25 odd years in corporate retail. My real passion is people, always has been. It doesn't matter whether it was retail or whatever it is, my real passion is people. And I think it took a really big, I suppose, life event about 8 years ago now, 2012, where I was off work with severe depression and anxiety that kind of made me rethink things to a point where I wanted to kind of really get involved, change direction a little bit, but always about people, because I have a very simple philosophy in life that I think everybody listening to this, everybody are incredible people capable of incredible things. But I think there's one thing that consistently gets in our way, which is us. And I think for me is what I love to see and help support partner people in kind of creating and doing things that I think at the start they never thought possible. And I think for me, that's what drives me every day. I love what I do, talking to people, getting them to think. Really, I can only really create awareness in the thinking to be able to do the things that they want to do. And for me, when I see people bloom, flourish, whoever they are, family members, complete strangers who I talk to, that just gives me a real buzz. So I'm delighted to be able to talk to you two today about a subject I'm hugely passionate about.
Wonderful. Thank you, JP. And could you tell us more about why you do what you do? So, you know, what is it that drives you really?
Well, why do I do it? And this is a pet subject, really, because I know when I came out of the corporate world and kind of stood in this space, and when people would say, oh, friends of mine, kind of ex-colleagues used to say, what are you doing now? And I used to kind of think a minute and go, well, I'm a coach, I'm a trainer, I'm a speaker, I'm a facilitator. And you can tell from me describing that thing, even I was bored with me saying that. So what it really got me thinking about, so what is my core purpose in life? It's not what I'm doing, it's why I'm doing it. And I think for me, having done some work on it over quite a long period of time, and I now help people, teams and organizations do the same thing, how I articulate it or how I talk about it is my core purpose in life is to inspire and energize people to be the most brilliant version of themselves. And the impact I want to have is so that we flourish. I genuinely want each and every, I get really excited about now, I'm kind of slightly passionate, probably soapboxy about, I want to help businesses and people create environments where people genuinely, absolutely genuinely go bouncing into work every single day. Because actually, I think, can you imagine what we could achieve if every single person listening to this podcast was to go into work every day as that very best version of themselves? Won't change any of the challenges they face, won't change any of the struggles that they have, but it will definitely change the way that we deal with it. And I think for me, that gives me goosebumps about what we could achieve if we do that. So that's why I do with it. What I do, I think, Jasmine, I just want people to recognize themselves for who they are. At their best over time, kind of practice that so they can do it more often.
I think that's so powerful, especially now. I think people are, you know, losing a lot of faith in the world, in political systems, in themselves. And there is this attitude of just, you know, being suspended in uncertainty at the moment. So I think that sense of, you know, tackling the day as your best self, as that best version of yourself, is so important now more than ever before.
I just think, I mean, I can't change any of that. I mean, I can't, it's bombarding me, kind of listening to the news and all that kind of stuff. It's all around us. But I can't change it. But what I can change, and what we, everybody listening to this, can change is us, or look at us about how we're going to deal with it. I think there's so much around, there's a stat you probably heard, kind of 10% of your life is actually what happens to you. 90% of your life is made up about how you respond to that. And I think for me, it's like how we respond to the events and things around us is within our control. And I think that's something that I'm more aware of now. And it's something we can all influence. And I think particularly now, I think the uncertainty, because I know kind of, and I get fascinated. If my science teachers from school were listening to this, they would be thinking, who is this guy talking about this kind of stuff? But what I know, I mean, I get fascinated by the brain and how it's all wired up and stuff like that. But what the brain thrives on is predictability, processes, hardwired habits, kind of efficiency. Now, if you think about predictability at the moment, we have got no idea what's going on. Maybe what there'll be another announcement and stuff like that. We have no predictability about the next 6 months. I mean, even the Chancellor in the last few days have announced that the furlough scheme in the UK has been extended until March. Well, that everybody starts going, oh my God, what does that mean? That kind of the next 4 weeks we're going to be locked down till March. Complete key around actually our thinking. And I think that's what we can control. That's what we can look at and work on right now to give us that sense of control and sense of well-being that we are being and dealing with whatever the world throws at us as that very best version of ourselves. And that's what I think I get more passionate about. I get more interested and excited about that because that's the work I think we can do, fill ourselves up with that inner resilience that we can use for way beyond pandemic is giving us right now.
I think you're so right. And I think people need to focus exactly as you said on what they can control and not what they can't. And that actually takes us really nicely onto our next question, which is what would be your top tip for life then? Would it be encapsulating that point? Or what do you feel would be your top tip for people?
My top tip is the best piece of advice I was ever given. And I give it to people in every single situation I can. And this, you mean it's a podcast, you can't see me doing hand signals. But a best piece of advice I was ever given in some situations, because taking that point about control, we want control over things. We want control of what other people think. We want control over what other people do. And we've got no control over it at all. And in some situations, my top tip would be to smile and move, baby. Smile and move. Sometimes you've got to just smile and move on because actually you can't change those people in front of you or that situation. And getting, I suppose, anxious or getting frustrated by it is not good for us. So for me, it's just a case of top tip, smile and move, baby. Smile and move.
I love that. I think that's really wonderful. And I read actually a Japanese expression yesterday, which is ukiyo. And the idea is living in the moment, detached from the bothers of life in the floating world. And it's that same concept, right? Of just going through life, moving through it and not carrying the weight of everything. Yeah. We don't need to be carrying the weight of everything in our day. It's your choice. As you mentioned, it's a choice. We either carry that weight and we let it weigh us down, or we decide, no, I'm going to let it roll off my back today and just go through it and live in that floating world. I thought it was a really nice expression and it relates very closely to your concept of smile and move and just move on.
Yeah, well, you can't. I mean, we want that control. I mean, even my kids now replay it back to me because they get stressed out about stuff and they talk to you and they just see it in my face and they look at me and go, you're just going to tell me to smile and move, aren't you? And I'm like, yeah, I am. Because it's like, thinking is such a big part of it. I mean, they reckon you have how we think about things creates the emotions and how we feel about stuff. So actually, but we have 80,000, they reckon 80,000 thoughts a day. A majority of those are negative because our brains are negatively biased, but also probably 80 to 90% of those thoughts, we had the same thought yesterday. So how we think, how we start training our thinking, because we can all think differently. We can all rewire our brains to think in a more, I think, in a more useful way for us. And you can't, the thing is, Jasmine, you can't not think. If I ask you now to just kind of take a moment and not think, I would guarantee you're probably thinking about not thinking. Or if everybody on that podcast was thinking about not thinking. So you can't not do it. Some people call it your inner voice and stuff like that. So it's constantly, your thinking's constantly going on. And I think it's that kind of, we don't need to grasp hold of that thought. We don't need to process it. It's just a thought. And we know fine well that another one will come along very quick. But actually, is my thinking about all these situations useful to me or useless? And it's like, we can start giving ourselves a little bit of time, a little bit of space to make that choice much more productively and much more useful for us. And I think that's, I think certainly over this uncertainty and these unpredictable times, how we work on ourselves and certainly our thinking is probably, for me, where we can support ourselves the most.
100%. And I think you're right. We're all plagued so constantly by an inner critic. And if we can actually reflectively, and as you said, using like a mindful approach, you know, just observe, do I need that thought? Is it useful or useless? I love that. And I think that's a really nice way for people to approach their life. Every time I do a podcast, our previous speaker or our previous interviewee will give a question, a mystery question. So we wanted to ask you the mystery question of the day, which is, what would your 12-year-old self be most proud of and most regretful of looking back now?
Wow, what a great question. Whoever said that. What would he be most proud of? That actually, I'm still here and I'm starting to flourish. I think I was thinking the other few months ago that my autobiography or a book should be flourishing at 50, because actually that's when kind of through my early 40s and into my late 40s, that's when I think I know it sounds a bit weird, found myself or kind of really understood who I really was, not trying to be somebody else or not trying to please other people. I think the 12-year-old self would be most proud of the work or how I've evolved, how I've changed, and how I've kind of see things now. Most regretful of, probably it took till my mid-40s to do that and to see that. And certainly if I was to switch it around and kind of from now tell, the advice I would give my younger self is just go for it. Don't worry about what other people think. Don't worry about, just look at things, what you want to do. What are you passionate about? I remember I did my A-levels in the UK for really subconsciously for what I thought my parents wanted me to do. They never said anything. We never sat down and talked about it. But subconsciously, I did my A-levels more for what they were, for how would they feel about me doing those subjects rather than stuff that I was really genuinely interested in. I mean, I did maths pure and applied, and it's just like, that, what the heck was I doing that for? I wasn't doing it for me, but actually for me, and that's what I want to kind of help my children see and others. It's like, do the stuff you're passionate about, do the stuff you love that gives you energy, gives you that kind of inspiration or kind of that energy, because that's the stuff you can then go off and who knows what's going to happen in the year. You're going to be working for a long time. And I think for me, I don't feel like what I do now for the last 6 years is work. I mean, even my wife turns around and says, when you had a proper job. And it's just like, this for me is, I just love doing what I do. And I think for me, my 12-year-old self should be really proud of that journey over the probably 40 years from then till now, as I turn 52 next week. But it's like, also regretful it took till probably my early mid-40s before I kind of realized and recognized and started being me.
That's really powerful. Jason, do you want to chip in there?
Sure, it is. And I think it's a great question to ask anybody. And I think anybody listening in should well be asking themselves that same question. You know, what is it? And I know we do when we talk about what advice. So moving on from the mystery question that you've had to answer, what would you like to ask our next guest? And how would you answer that mystery question?
What would be my mystery question? I think I'd flip it around in that question I was just talking about. What advice would you now give your 12-year-old self? I think it's a great question about what would they be proud of and what they'd be regretful of maybe. But actually, what advice would you give your 12-year-old self? Because I think if you can start kind of recognizing, going back, but also then you can say, okay, so in, I don't know, I could set myself. So that's my question, is what advice would you give your 12-year-old self about life? But also, I think for me, I've started looking at things in a different way, really. That's backwards. I want to start looking forwards now around, actually. And what I do on a regular basis is I write letters to myself from the future. So generally, I don't make New Year's resolutions generally. I don't make New Year's resolutions completely. I would write a letter to myself from the start of the year, from the end of the year, describing in lots of rich emotive language, how have I been and what have I accomplished the year, and how am I being, have I been to enable to myself to do that. And you write it in present tense language. So it's not, oh, I hope to be, it's I did. And I did this because I behaved like this. And I did this because I behaved like that. And I was being like this and stuff like that. And for me, that's probably one of the exercises that completely flipped my thinking. We are so governed by the past that actually, and that's kind of the human condition. We hold on to it. But actually for me, it's like, let's completely change this. I heard somebody call it right to left thinking, rather than normally people, when you're trying trying to do something different. You sit in the present moment now, and you look behind you. You look in the look at past history about what have you done, and what, and or actually as an individual, as an organisation, what have we done? Apply that to what we're doing now, and then we'll get the result. I just want to forget about what we did in the past and how we did it. I want to project into the future. Describe the incredible result that you want to have, and then step back, and we can work out how we need to be to enable all that to happen. It's completely changed the way I think about how I do.
And is this something you sort of do every year, or is it, could you do it over a week or over a month?
You can do it whenever you want. You can do it kind of situation by situation. And as a coach, that's what I get lots of people to do. It's like, actually, if you've got a, I don't know, presentation to make or whatever, well, let's go to the end of the presentation and write your review. Let's write your review now about what you want people to be saying about you, or what were people saying about you. And then you can turn around, and then we can go around, once we've got that really clear, how do we need to be to enable that to happen? If you're going into a year-end review with at work, write it in advance, because then your subconscious takes over. The power of your subconscious is we're pre-programming it, because actually then we've got a solution for anything that comes up. We've already planned it. And certainly with the people I work in sport, there's a concept called the if-then scenario, where you could pre-program and preload your subconscious with responses to any bit of adversity you ever want. So if this happens, then I'll do this, or then I'll behave like this, then I'll be like this. You can do all of that kind of stuff, so that actually when it comes to it, you've already got a response which is useful to you. You've already pre-programmed it. And I think the more I do that, the more beneficial I see it. And certainly people I work with see it. The power of your subconscious is incredible. But you need to really kind of embed it so that it becomes automatic.
I want to pick up on a little bit that you mentioned in there, and you've mentioned this a couple of times, and it's the B element. I think there's a lot of people can quite easily map out, if this happens, I'll do that. And almost like a game of chess, right? They're thinking a few moves ahead, and if this and the way, do I go, and then we'll do all these things. I don't think, from what I've seen of people in general who haven't had the benefit of spending time with yourself, we don't often apply enough how we're going to be whilst we're doing those things.
I don't think we apply it at all. I think we're obsessed with doing stuff. Got to do it. Got to do more. Got to do more with less and stuff like that. Everybody probably listened to this podcast this morning, woke up, and once they've got the sleep out of their eyes, probably completely their first automatic thought was to go into what have they got to do today. And I think kind of, so my homework for everybody on the podcast is, I want you waking up tomorrow morning and the first thought is, so how do I want to be today? I want to be kind. I want to be generous. I want to be grateful. I want to be engaged. I want to be connected to people. It's a completely different way of doing. I'm not saying get rid of your to-do list, because actually I know people like it, and the benefit of kind of ticking things off and being organized, but actually I think let's switch it and have more emphasis on being. We're human beings at the end of the day, not human doings. We completely forget about it, because we're obsessed with doing stuff. And just be, I mean, it's that mindfulness, kind of all that kind of, just be in the moment. It's kind of, I think there's a great quote, or sometimes we use in some of the sessions we run, it's kind of, sometimes you just got to step outside, kind of smell the air, and kind of recognize who you want to be. And it's like, it's being, not doing. It's like, not recognize what I want to do, it's who I want to be.
I would wholeheartedly agree. And it's not, one's not exclusive to the other. They're mutual. They operate side by side. And if you focus completely on how you're being or completely on what you're doing, I think, you know, a good balance of both. And in certain situations, there are just going to be things that you react. You know, you're crossing the road, you see a car, you're going to speed up. You don't stop and think, oh, how am I going to be as that car hurtles towards me? There are certain things you're just going to do, but they're instinctive.
They're autopilot, and they've been ingrained in you. But I think it's like, even if you've got a massive to-do list or a massive task ahead that might cause you a little bit of anxiety, now, how am I going to do it? How am I going to do this? I think, again, going back to the to-be list, how do I need to be to enable me to do this? Because being anxious and on edge and stuff like that is not going to help me be effective and do the stuff that I'm capable of doing. You probably pull yourself back a little bit. So you, whatever you're facing, I think it's a great question. I think it was, I can't remember who said it, but it's like, people say the quality of your life is determined by the quality of your questions. And that's questioning yourself, like how do I want to be to enable all this to happen? Great question.
I'd go so far as to say the quality of your podcast is partly down to the quality of your questions. But yeah, no,
It's complete. You know, no, actually, if you ask crap questions, you're going to get crap responses, and therefore you're not going to get a great set of materials to go on. So opening it up with a great question as a coach, you're trained in things. And I remember when I first started doing coaching training is there's a thing, powerful question. And it's like, so when you first start off as a coach, you're obsessed with every question you have to ask is a powerful question. And actually kind of, if you don't, it's just like, but you get stressed out about it. It's like, you just, then as you get better and kind of get more familiar with it. I think some of the best questions I've asked have been absolutely non-powerful, but it gives you some space to go with. But it's questions. It's all about the questions you ask yourself.
JP, on that point, how would you say that people can ask themselves better questions and not just stay in kind of like a comfortable place or like a place that they're not actually reflecting enough or going into enough depth? How would you help people to ask those more powerful questions to themselves?
Well, I think first thing I would get people to do is, let's think about you at your best. What do you look like, sound like? How are you behaving? What qualities do you want to have? You can describe and design almost that perfect you, that best version of you, qualities, behaviors, stuff like that. Once you've got that really clear, and I would really encourage people to write it down. There is a massive visceral response in writing things down. If you're going to change anything, they reckon it starts through your hand. And that's why I not worry about the texting generation or the tip-tapping on the keyboard. It's not the same visceral response. It doesn't go into your subconscious as much as writing things down. So I would write that in as much kind of emotive, visceral language that means something to you. You've got that's your blueprint then. And then you've got something kind of in every situation to ask yourself the question about, so how do I respond in this situation when I'm being like that? Just, you don't need much time after a little while of practice, but actually you've got a blueprint, as I would say, to be able to kind of put or a lens in which to put every situation through and ask yourself the question. So how would the best version of me respond to this, like this? Give it a go. Practice. You're not going to get it right all the time, but it's all about practice. It's all about situation. And the more you practice something, the more you do something, the more it will be ingrained in your brain. The neural pathways will kind of bed down. And that becomes, over time, I reckon between 66 and 90 days to change a habit, become the way you automatically now respond. So the more you practice a response from that position, the more that will be the automatic cue. And I think for me, that's the starting point, is if you've got no clear idea about that best version of you, you've not got a lens in which to ask yourself the question about how you're going to respond. And I think certainly it's a weird exercise to write about yourself, but it's well worth it. Well worth it.
Jasmine's just picked up on, and I think it is relevant, that the powerful or softer questions that we should ask ourselves, and you know, we intend to try and get a list together from people that we can think of that they can ask themselves that make you more reflective, more compassionate, more caring, and sort of get you back to being the better version of you.
Yeah, I think one of the questions I ask a lot is when I'm working with people one-on-one is, what are you learning about? What have you learned about yourself through that situation? Or what are you learning about yourself in that situation? And giving people time and space to answer it. Because when you're learning stuff about how you respond, you might get hijacked by stuff. But also, again, it's good opportunities to practice. I mean, we know, all three of us on this call now, that as soon as we finish this podcast, the world is going to get in our way. And we're going to have the opportunity to practice that best version of us response to phone call, an email, whatever it's going to be, a piece of work. We're going to have the opportunity to practice lots of times every single day, and that's what it is. And then you can sit down, reflect. That's why I think reflection time and journaling is such a powerful tool that I think it's becoming more prevalent, but kind of I still think loads of people could benefit from it. It's just taking a little bit of time at the end of the day or at the start of the day, pre-programming or thinking about you're learning through all of this so that you can plan it. Because if you know what you've got ahead in the day, you can pre-plan and write down and journal your responses ahead of it. Because you know kind of what might happen. And again, good for your well-being. At the end of the day, sitting down and thinking, what did I learn today? What were three good things about today? But also, what did I learn about myself today? All of that stuff going into a journal is creating a real body of evidence for you that actually of you responding as that very best version of yourself. And I think once you read it, if you've got a journal, I've got one in front of me, not everybody can see, but actually you've got a body of evidence there that shows you can do it.
You know, JP, I couldn't agree more. I think actually this act of reflecting on the everyday is so powerful. I started really journaling for the first time throughout this year. And I mean, it's a fascinating time to start journaling when the world is in such turmoil, really, and craziness. And I know a lot of people that have. I've actually got a friend that was doing a journal. She turned her journal into art and into song and has created an album, a music album, which takes you through a journey of this year. And it's really beautiful, the act of reflection, turning that into art and sharing that with others. And it's just, she's done phenomenally well and people have really resonated with it. And I think you're right, that act of just, you know, saying to yourself, what have I learned today? What have been good things about my day? And reflecting, you know, I think it was Wayne Dyer that talked a lot about how he would do a lot of journaling every single day. And he'd ask himself at the end of the week, right, what have I done? It's like a self-reflection, or like, you know, you give yourself an appraisal of how you've done that week. And he said it was the most powerful thing he did, was just asking himself those questions. So I think you're so right. That is a really brilliant way to have that time. And people still aren't putting that in enough in their day.
Well, they're busy. They're busy and they don't see they've got time. Time, I think, is most precious asset. We people, what are the barriers that get in their way? And time is one of them. And I think just giving yourself, I'm not saying you need to spend hours doing it. You can spend 10 minutes doing it, or even 5 minutes, giving yourself a little bit of time, because I'm sure everybody could find 10 minutes in a day to be able to just sit down, reflect and note it down. And I think, as you say, I'm sure your friend didn't realize that once she'd done all of this, what it could become. It was just a case of doing it. And I think the more you do that and recognizing the good stuff that's out there, again, your brain will automatically pick it up, because you create a habit that at the end of today, you're going to sit down and what are the three good things? Mm. So we better start noticing stuff that might be in the three things for today. And if you don't do that, you could be, because the brain is negatively biased, you'll be looking at other stuff that causes you problems.
And do you know what I think is actually even more important is, you know, this idea that we're constantly self-critical. Jason's talked about this before, and he speaks to people and says, right, you know, what could you improve? They have 1,000 things to say about what they could be doing better. The second you say, right, what are you proud of that you've done today or this week? People find that more difficult. And I think it's actually that kind of, you know, giving yourself a bit of a pat on the back. Okay, today I've actually potentially maybe you've helped someone, or you know, whatever you can actually think of that you're proud of. That's, I think, a really important thing for people to ask themselves as well.
Yeah, as a quote I've loved, I've only picked it up in the last few weeks, but it's a quote by Albert Ellis, and he says, be gentle with yourself while you strive to do your best. And I think we give ourselves a hard time. I ask people all the time, it's like, would you ever talk to other people like you do to yourself? And the answer is always no. And it's like, so why do we do it to ourselves? I mean, we're working in sport, and the concept of mental rehearsal is your brain cannot differentiate between an imagined event and a real one. So that constant negative dialogue you're having about yourself, your brain thinks is real. So therefore, that's what he'll see and stuff like that. And I think for me, it's like imagining and picking up on all that good stuff. That's the stuff that goes in. That's the stuff that goes in and gets processed. And that's the stuff I would want people to do. And be gentle with yourself. Be kind. There was a concept, I picked it up, being flawsome, because actually we're all flawed. I'm a huge screw up in many ways. But actually, I think recognizing that I'm unique, we're all unique, but I think I'm pretty flawsome. And I think we're all flawsome. And I love it as a word. I don't even know whether it's a real word or not, but I think it's a great concept. That's how I think about myself. Flawed, but awesome in many other ways.
It's interesting that you mentioned about the flaws. You know, I feel I ought to join in the linguist club here. And there's a Japanese expression called kintsugi, which is when they repair things with a golden glue, and they celebrate its imperfections because it makes it unique. And scars show you've lived, right? And I like that.
Well, it's the art. Kintsugi is the art of the precious scar. And actually, whereas we would dismiss them, they celebrate it. And I think you're right, Jason. It's like we're all human kintsugi, or whatever, however you pronounce it, because we've all got that flaw, we've all got those imperfections, but that's what's made us. All those experiences we've had to the age that we are now has made us what we are, who we are. And rather than dismissing it and kind of being self-critical, that has been a huge impact on me about how I see things now. I remember a really good friend of mine. He was the one that encouraged me and kind of got me into the business that I eventually ended up having 6 months off work from. And every time I see him now, he apologizes, I wish I'd never done it. I wish I'd never kind of, oh, and it's like, I don't regret it at all. I don't regret it. And that's it. Stop apologizing, because actually that's what's kind of helped shape me. Yeah, it was a time I don't really want to kind of relive again, but actually it has shaped me about how I see things now. And without that experience, I'm not sure I'd have been sat here talking to you. I'd be here, but actually I'd still be a corporate suit doing whatever.
And I agree. And I think I went through the gears of corporate, well, not corporate life, but sort of outside success, and things look great and just sort of chase bigger and shinier things. And you hit a point where you suddenly realize that maybe that there is slightly more to it than this. And I think that's a massive, you know, for me, that's a massive part. And I would have always been very cynical if anybody who had had an element of success came up and said, look, money just genuinely doesn't make you happy. I get that a complete lack of it would be awful. But once, you know, the base standard of living is covered, it's little things that make you so much happier, not shiny things that are available online. It's just, it's moments.
Well, I think, yeah, I mean, I went to that job for the salary. If I'm brutally honest with myself and everybody listening, I went for the salary. I did 4.5 years in that business and hated every second of it. It wasn't me. Yet the outside world would have said I was successful, but it wasn't me. I mean, and that reflection phase through that tough period, which I lovingly call my shorts and flip-flops phase, because I literally just wore shorts and flip-flops and kind of quite relaxed. But it was that time to reflect, and I'm very lucky to have had it. I wish I hadn't had it in the situation I had, but you learn so much and you're able to kind of, right, so what is the future? Well, how do I want to be? The to-be list was massive there, the kind of best version of me, describing it, writing it down, what I then tried to do, and some of the, and push me forward, really. And then that purpose thing I talked about helps push me forward to get out of my comfort zone and do stuff that I wouldn't necessarily do. I mean, the thought of me speaking on a podcast that somebody might listen to, I would have gone, no, I'm not doing that. I'm not doing that. Whereas now it's like, look, I can give you who I am. And whenever I present and stuff like that, I'll give you me. You might not relate to it. You might not respond to it. You might not agree with some of the stuff I say, but that's you. I mean, I'm just trying to get people to think and create that awareness, because awareness gives you a choice about how you're going to respond. And I think if we can create that awareness, and what you're doing with the podcast, you're creating great awareness in people and to make some of the changes that they want to make. None of us are going to be able to do it for them. We as coaches and people can help and support. But actually, I think if they really want to do it, then they will. But it starts with awareness.
I agree. This whole... The positivity thing we talked about, it does require effort. Sometimes it's easier to fit in with the less positive version of you or the less positive people that can be around you. I remember once having someone turn around to me and say, yeah, it's all well and good, but you're never alone with a moan, are you? You're never going to be saying, it's like, well, no, I kind of get where you are. And it does require effort. But then I think life is worth that effort. There is absolutely no two ways about that at all.
There's no rehearsals. We'll get one go of this. And actually, for me, it's like, there's a great book on my bookshelf behind me. It's a mindfulness book by Jon Kabat-Zinn, big name in mindfulness, brilliant book. It says, wherever you go, there you are. And I think for me, it took me far too long to realize that I am with me 24 hours a day, with me. So do I want to spend time with the best version of me, or do I want to spend time with the worst version of me? That is my choice. And for me, it's kind of helped. That really helped, and spending some time doing stuff for you. I mean, as an exercise I do with people when I talk to them, kind of it's almost like self-nurturing, or it's a sustainer and drainer list I get people to do. So if you've got a piece, everybody listening, if you get a piece of paper, draw a line down the middle of it, and on the right-hand side, write drainers, and on the left-hand side, write sustainers. Now, on the right-hand side, write all the activities that you do or involved in, work, outside of work, that drain you, or people that drain you. And on the left-hand side, all the activities that sustain you, make you feel good, that kind of building up that mental, that kind of personal resilience or feeling and stuff like that. And that can be anything, walking, reading, even watching the telly for a bit, listening to music, all those kind of things. And even stuff you do at work. Now, I always ask the question, which list is going to be longer? Drainer, probably. Where do you spend most of your time? Drainer. The key for me is actually look at the stuff that is in there, in your sustainer list. How could you spend a little bit more time doing that? Because that, you know, that's good for you. You know that's good for you. That's therefore good for other people, because enables you to be the best version of you. But we tend to, it's skewed a little bit. So I kind of think, let's wrestle it back. Or at the end of the day, write all the activities you've done during the day and put a D and an S against each one. Did it drain me? Did it sustain me? And again, spending more time trying to get in, trying to do a little bit more every single day, that stuff that sustains you.
It's interesting because when I talk to people, I often mention that a lot of us operate on a to-do list and put the to-be bit to one side. Historically, most people with a to-do list highlight the things they haven't done, carry them on to the next day, rewrite them down because they become their priority for the next day. The stuff you didn't achieve today goes onto your list for tomorrow. So when you come back in, you look the next day, you look at all the things you didn't do. You're setting yourself up with all the failures that you had, all the things you didn't accomplish. I ask people to find something that they're really proud of that they did, that really empowered them, that set them alight, it brought them to life. Write that at the top of your list for the next day so that when you come in, you're reminding yourself of that fantastic thing that you achieved, and then tackle your to-do list from there. But remind yourself that you did achieve something fantastic.
But I think that in these times, in the pandemic, all these unpredictable, unprecedented times, that's even more important for both you as an individual, but as an organization or a team, to recognize and to kind of vocalize, kind of make sure that people understand and are aware of what you are achieving. All the stuff that you're proud of in the last few months of what you've achieved as an organization or as a team or even on your own, because you forget, because we're constantly on that to-do list and constantly got more to do, constantly got to do all of this kind of stuff. But actually, and therefore we lose sight of what we actually have achieved. And I think certainly in unpredictable times, it's important for human beings to recognize that they are making progress, they are getting stuff done, and it's not just a total kind of journey to stuff still to do. I think that's very draining and not good for you, because you're forgetting all the stuff you've already done.
So JP, how do you think people constantly want to be productive, right? There's this whole thing about how do I be productive? How do I be my most productive self? How would you suggest people do that, but still maintaining this notion of being present? You know, how do they have their to-do list, but not get too wrapped up in the idea of doing, achieving?
Well, it's interesting, isn't it? A lot of people are working from home, a lot of focus on working from home or working from anywhere. Because actually now working from home actually is going to mean we can work from anywhere. And I think as things go on, the to-do list still kind of getting stuff done or achieving stuff at work is going to be about outcomes. Be clear on the outcomes, but also then give people freedom to be able to do it. So actually, I don't know. I mean, the three of us on this podcast, we probably all at our best at a different time of the day. So I know I'm at my best first thing in the morning. I'm probably at my most productive, and I might be more productive late at night after I've had a day. So I think we've got the ability to kind of create the work pattern and future that we want to be at our best. I know certainly if I take my 15-year-old daughter through the initial lockdown in March, when the schools were closed in the UK, I really did think about actually how are they going to cope? Because I know as a 15-year-old, if I look at the 15-year-old me, I'd have probably done nothing. But actually she flourished through the work that she did. And I was really proud of how she did it. She didn't do it during school hours. She knew what she had to achieve and had to achieve it by the time. And she planned her day around when she was at her best, which is afternoon, evening. So what if she didn't get out of bed till 11 o'clock? We know all teenagers shouldn't go to school before midday because they're not really awake. Their brains aren't awake. That gave her the opportunity to structure her day and her, I would say, productivity. She got it done much better and to a higher level, I think, than if she'd have been at school, because she was doing it and she had access to materials in a different way that how she wanted to do it in when she was at her best. And I know that, and speaking, I shared a stage with a young entrepreneur. And he said he's at his best between 10 and midnight. Well, I'm in bed. I'm knackered by then and I'm in bed. But as long as he gets the job done, who cares when you do it? And I think for me, it's like, let's think about the structure of our day and how do we do it to be at our best? So yes, you've got a to-do list, but it doesn't mean you've got to sit down at your desk for 8 hours and try and crank it out. You can go for a walk. In fact, I was reading something last night where businesses made it almost compulsory for people to go for a walk between 1 o'clock and 2 o'clock in the afternoon. You can structure it. I think about your day and when you're at your best. When have you got most energy? When do you think you're most productive? Because sitting at a desk kind of under traditional office hours, I'm not sure you're as productive as you could be. Getting up a bit early. Chunk of work, take a break, go for a walk, do the stuff that sustains you, gets your energy back up, go back. As long as you're clear, I think people are clear on the outcomes that people expect of them, give them the freedom then to kind of create it. And I think over time then you I think you genuinely create workspaces or work environments where people can flourish, but it'll be different for everybody.
I think you've made a really, really interesting and powerful point there in the way that people should be structuring their days around when they're most productive. And not only that, I think there's a lot to say about creativity as well. You've got productivity on one end of the spectrum, and then, you know, in order for humans to be competitive really against technology these days, they need to be creative, they need to be innovative, and they need to think out of the box. So I think in those times where you're not super productive, like I'm the same as you, first thing in the morning my brain's switched on, a lot of people's are, and then in the afternoon it kind of wanes and it goes into this more meandering state. Right. And I think that is the time when you can be more creative. You can potentially write, or you can do a bit of the out of the box kind of thinking. And then, you know, when you're more switched on, you're more kind of tapped into that productive brain. You can then actually get more immersed in like maybe more repetitive tasks, for example. Or so I think it's quite interesting the way as well you could structure your day around productivity and then creativity and that meandering of the mind as well.
Yeah. And you look at the research around the cut. You've had Andy Cope on here, and it's kind of he introduced me to the Dutch concept, they call it Nixon, the art of doing nothing either. Yeah. And if you look at the research behind it around the power of mind wandering, is just sitting still for 10, well, do nothing for 10 minutes. It's quite a hard thing to do. And I mean, doing nothing with, so there's no purpose to it. It's just literally staring out the window, maybe staring at a brick wall, going outside and just staring at stuff. Because then as you say, Jasmine, your brain has the ability to problem solve, be creative, come up with all kinds of ideas. I mean, we all know that when people say sleep on it, sleep on a problem, sleep on a challenge and stuff like that, suddenly you wake up in the morning and your brain comes up with some fabulous ideas because your subconscious goes to work on it all. Your subconscious goes to work on it all. And actually learning to do nothing can create you that space. But also, yeah, just give yourself a bit of time to rejuvenate. But your subconscious will come up with all sorts of different things. And I think, yeah, structuring a day or finding a way that actually is right for you, we're all different. But it's not 9 to 5 anymore. You can, but the outcomes, and I think what's been great over lockdown is, whereas I think there's probably been lots of mistrust probably by some leaders of their people because they want to see the whites of their eyes, they want them in the office because then they know what they're doing. Actually, and the inverted commas around working from home, I hope is dead, because guess what? We have actually got stuff done and those outcomes have been delivered when everybody's working from home and doing the washing and maybe going for the walk and taking the dog for a walk and doing all those kind of things. So let's use that ability and knowledge now to create that environment where people have freedom. They're clear about what they've got to achieve, but they've structured a way of working that means it's really beneficial for them. Yeah, and give yourself a bit of time to sit and do absolutely nothing. Try it. I think everybody on this podcast, try trying to do Nixon for 10 minutes. It's not easy. It's not easy.
So if you were to try to give us some tips on podcasts moving forwards and thoughts about and stuff you'd like to hear, what is there anything that springs to mind?
I think anything that gets people thinking to create that awareness, okay? You are a product of the 5 people you spend most time with. So choose wisely. Again, maybe going to your sustainer drainer list. Do those people sustain you? Do they look after you? Do they support you? Or do they drain you or kind of make you do stuff you don't want to do?
JP, thank you very, very much.
Oh, my pleasure. My pleasure. It's been an absolute joy to talk to you both. Good luck with this. I think get it out of there. Get it out of there.
Thank you.
I think it's particularly now, it's needed.